Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zorah, Daf Nun. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The Gemara with which we will be continuing is found at the two dots toward the upper part of Daf Nun. We are going to be analyzing or continuing to explain some of the points that were discussed before with regard to the issue of stones found in the vicinity of a markerless. The Gemara that we open up with begins with a quote from Mem Tes Amud Beis. So in order to enable you to find where things are coming from in our marking system, we often provide arrows in the space to the immediate right or left-hand side of the Gemara. Text. In this case, we have an arrow with a Mem Tes Amud Beis that you'll find to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara. That means scan on Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis and find a corresponding arrow with an indication to look at Daf Nun. You'll find one about three lines from the bottom of Nun of Mem Tes Amud Beis. The Rav Yitzchok Bar Yosef, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, made a comment that biyodua, if you know that stones came from a markerless, biyodua shenoshu imenu, divrei hakol asurus, everyone will be in agreement that those stones that fell off of the markerless, if you know it came from a markerless, everyone will agree that they're forbidden. Turning to our Gemara, Omar Mar, biyodua shenoshu imenu, if you know the stones came from the markerless, divrei hakol asurus, everyone will be in agreement that the stones are forbidden. Veromini, we now present a Tanaic source that will show that it's not really the case. Not that everyone, even in the case of Yodua, you can still have a heter, something muter. The source you can see is in a frame, as are all framed sections in our Gemara marking system, which is designed to set aside the Tanaic material quoted in the Gemara from the rest of the Gemara literature itself. So we have a source here. It says, Avonim Shenoshu Min HaMarkalis. The idea here is that Shenoshu, they fell off. You know it fell off. This is a case of Yodua. You know it fell from a Markalis. Niroisimo Asuros. If they appear as near it, they appear with it, then the stones are Asur. She'ein Niroisimo. If they don't appear with it, mutaros. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, shalosh asuros, shtayim mutaros. Three are mutar, are asur, three are forbidden, but two stones are permitted. For our purposes, we've dashed underlined the main point. That is the word mutaros. Here you have a case of something that's yodua. You know it came from a markerless, and yet they are mutar. That's contrary to what was indicated on Mem Tes Amud Beis. Omar Rova. Lo temo shenoshru. Don't say in this source that they fell from a markerless, which would indicate that you know it comes from a markerless. Elo emo shenimtzu. Rather say, state they were found. They were nimtzu, right? Means found near a markerless. And in such a case, we say that if they're nirosimo, if they appear with the markerless, then they're forbidden, because we'll say they fell from the markerless. And they are, even though they're shvarim, even though they're fragments of, since we're dealing with a markerless, as we said on Mem Tes Amud Beis, it's the normal way for the markerless to fall apart, so to speak. Therefore, they are forbidden. The Gemara asks, V'sova Rabbi Shmuel Shtayim Mutaros? Could it be that Rabbi Shmuel will hold that two stones that are within four amos of the markerless are mutar? V'ha Tanya. We have the following source, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Shtayim b'tfisa loy asuros. The expression tfisa is indicative of something of a distance of four amos. So if you have two stones within four amos, Rabbi Shmuel says they are usur. So how can we suggest that, according to Rabbi Shmuel, two stones within four amos would be allowed? The source continues and says, Shalosh afilu meruchokos asuros. If there are three stones, even if they are distanced, they are forbidden. Omar Rava, lo kashya. Kan betfiso achas. Where you see, like in this Tanaic source, that two are forbidden, that's because you're dealing with a case of tfiso achas. Kan b'shtei tfisos. The presentation of Rabbi Shmuel holding that two are allowed. We saw this in the Mishnah, where he said that shtayim utaros. That's because you're dealing with shtei tfisos. V'hechi domi. What is meant by tfisa achas versus shtei tfisas? Deika goiva beini beini. That there is some type of mound or hill between that which you found and the original markalis. Let us take a look at Rashi. The tfisa achas. Ha dikotoni asuros, the Tanaic source that said that the two stones are forbidden, betfisachas she'ein hefsik beinom lemarkelis. There's no gap. There's no interposition, blocking. Nothing blocking the two stones you found and the markelis itself. The asura beinu shmoel beinu rabbonon, and the prohibition regarding two stones, betfisachas, is across the boards. The chol toich dalet amos. Anything that's within four amos, neros imo kori lei. The term neros imo can be referred. Ubeshalosh meruchokos hu depligi. With regard to three stones that are meruchokos, that is the subject of a machlokis. The hadu kim nuliel pluktayo besoch dalet amos, and that we set up earlier in the Gemara. The machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and the Rabbonan within four amos, uli Rabbi Shmuel shtayim mutaros, uli Rabbonan sholosh nami mutaros, and within four amos, two stones are mutar according to Rabbi Shmuel, which is contrary to what we just said, that two stones within four amos are usur, no problem, because that case, that the two stones within four amos are mutter, that's b'shtei tfisos, k'demeforish. That's because there's something blocking or a mound that exists between the markalis and those two stones. The Gemara asks, u'markalis ki haigavno mi have? Three stones, one next to the other. Is that possibly a markalis? We saw in our Mishnah that Rabbi Shmuel said Sholosh Avonim Zu Bitzad Zu is forbidden, and we explained that those represented a Markalis Koton next to a Markalis Godol. So our question is, are three stones next to each other in fact like a markalis? In the space between the Gemara and the Rashi, to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, you notice an arrow pointing to this line, Ki Hai Gavno, which is a reference to Zubitzadu. We have a corresponding arrow five lines from the top, where you see the expression in the middle of the line, it says Shalosh Didamion Lamarkalis. And this three is a reference to the three that was seen in the Mishnah, which spoke about stones next to each other. We are now asking, is that really a markalis form? V'hotanya, we have a Tanaic source that says Elu Hein Avnei Beis Kulis, or a reference to markalis. Echas mikan, v'achas al gabehen. The source is asking, what is a markalis or Evan Beis Kulis? What is that? or Avnei Beis Kulis, where that's a situation where we have two stones side by side and one positioned on top of them, forming a, we'll call it a pyramid form, two side by side and one positioned on top of them, between them. Omar Rava, Ki Tanya Hi, the brisa that we just read that mentions this pyramid form, the Iker Markalis. That's when you're dealing with the construction of a Markalis at the outset. That when there's nothing there and you're building a Markalis for the first time, you would build it two stones next to each other and a third on top of them, between them. However, once you have a basic Markalis, there would be a situation of them constructing another Markalis formed by three stones next to each other, next to this one. Beyanai Malka Choruf, the house of Yanai the king, was destroyed. Also Ovdei Kechavim, Okimu Bei Markalis. The Gentiles came and set up a Markalis there. Also Ovdei Kechavim Achrini, Delo Palchi LaMarkalis. Other Gentiles that are not Markalis worshippers came along, Shaklinu, they took those stones, V'chipu B'endrochim V'satritois, and they paved some roads and plazas. Iko Rabona de Parshi, there were rabbis that distanced themselves from that, they didn't walk on them. V'iko Rabona de Lo Parshi, and there were Rabbanon that didn't separate themselves and walked on those roads. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Benon Shel Kedoshim Mahalech Aleihem Ve'anan Nifrosh Mehen. If Benon Shel Kedoshim, the Gemara will describe this personality in the brackets that are about to appear. If he, that we'll call him a very pious individual, if he walked on them, should we, who are, we'll call less stringent, should we separate ourselves? Should we practice greater piety? We have the bracketed section that features the the term or this title, Benon Shel Kedoshim. After the bracketed section, the Gemara immediately delves into the reasoning behind those that stayed away from those stones and those that used them. The Gemara in the bracket says, Man Nihu Benon Shel Kedoshim. Who is this character? Who is this gentleman? Answer, Rabbi Nachan Rabbi Simoi. That's his name. Vamai Korulei Benon Shel Kedoshim. Why is he referred to as the literally the son of the pious ones? An indication that he was pious. Dafilu Betsurta Dezuzo Lo Mistakel. He was so careful with halachas regarding idols that he would not look at the image that's found on a coin, the minted image of a coin. So a person who was so scrupulous in his care and practice of distancing himself from idolatry, if he was willing to walk on those stones that were previously part of a Markalis, but by the fact that the other Gentiles came, took them away, used them for paving, that's clearly a sign of them being botel, as being voided. And hence, he took advantage of it. Let's continue in the Gemara. My time of demand de Porish. What's the logic behind those that did not walk over those stones? Sovar lo ki hod yomar av gidol, omar av chiyah bar Yosef, omar rav. They are of the opinion that Rav Gidol reflects. From where do we know that things offered to an idol have no possibility of being botel, of being voided, ever? Shenema, Posuk says, Vayitzmenu valpor, vayochlu zivchei mesim. Ma meis ein loy betelo lo'ilom, just like a corpse is never going to be allowed. Af takruvas avodas kochavim, so too things offered to an idol, like you see featured in this pasuk that speaks about the Baal Peor, which was an idol, and the pasuk mentions zivchei mesim. Zivchei are sacrifices to the Baal Peor. So too the sacrifices, the takruvas avodas kochavim, ein lo betelo lolam. They too, just like a corpse, never have a point at which they would be allowed. we might mention that the stones featured here are viewed as takruvas of Eidus Kochavim. One who throws a stone at the Markalis, this is the way it's worshipped. Therefore, the stones are not considered an idol in and of itself, which is something, maybe ironically, the idol itself does have bittul. The things offered to the idol are stricter insofar as that they have no bittul, they have no voiding, and hence are never allowed. And these stones are considered an offering to the Markalis. Uman de lo porish, Omar, the rabbis that did not distance themselves from those roads, they figure bo'ino ke'ein pnim veleko. In order for something to be considered a takruvas of Eidus Kochavim, and hence be considered zivchei mesim, you would have to have it, have that thing that's offered similar to the offering in the Beis HaMikdash. Well, in the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't offer stones. Stones were not part of any offering. They weren't part of the service of anything, an offering of loose stones. Therefore, even though the stones were used in the service of the Markalis, they don't constitute a takruvas of Eidus Kochavim. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a geometric form that we want to take note of. We have a diamond with a shaded in tip. The mivneh note on the outside margin, the structural note, is designed to explain the role of different geometric forms as they appear in new sugyas. In this case, we have the diamond and we have a double underline. So the note on the outside margin explains what we will be seeing in the Gemara. Actually, before we read the note itself, let us draw your attention to the fact that this diamond is labeled as number one, and this you can see in the to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, a one in a diamond. That is designed to draw your attention to find a number two. That will require you to scroll down to Amud Beis or turn the page, and you will see six lines from the top of Amud Beis, another diamond with a number two. I want to note that that is part of a section of Gemara that you can see is in a bracket. In fact, the bracketed section is rather long. It covers most of the Omid. The end of the bracketed section also concludes with a slash mark. You can see all of this by looking at Omid Beis around eight lines from the bottom. You see where the brackets ends. If it's ever hard to find where a bracket ends, we also provide a length indicator for brackets, and that's illustrated by a vertical dash dotted line, and you can see that particular marking to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara on Amud Beis. So what are we saying? The number two that's in a diamond, the entire section that is dealt with by Roman numeral number two is in a brackets. Let us now look at the note that we have that accompanies this sugya. On Omid Aleph at the bottom, the Mivneh heading, the structural note, you see there is a diamond featured with a double underline. The diamonds are two dugmois, two examples, shel brisos, of Tanaic sources, Shereb Yosi bar Abba misaper, shehuva'u al yadei Rabo bar Yirmiya. They represent two sources that Rabbi Yossi will tell us that were presented by Rabbo Bar Yirmiya Shekoshlo Slavona. The two sources have some kind of difficulty in understanding them. So one we have here, and the first example in fact deals with issues of idolatry, which is our general topic. We note in our note on the side, Dugma number two, Shamuva Bamid Beis, Ein Lo Kesher L'Noyse Avodazora. The second example that's brought on Amud Beis has no connection to the issue of idolatry. That's why we have the whole section on Amud Beis in brackets, to indicate that it's a separate topic, and the only reason it's brought here is because it is brought in a similar way that topic number one is. As we mentioned, Rabbi Yosef Bar Abba indicates that Rabba tells us that they are difficult sources to understand. Let's now continue with the Gemara. Omar Rav Yosef Bar Abba. Itlo Rabba Bar Yirmiyahu La'asrin means Rabba came to our town, the Osava Aisi Masnisa Biodei, and he brought with him a Tanaic source. So after we finish reading the Tanaic source, you'll see a comment, Veles Nagor Velo Bar Nagor de Ferkina. And there's no son of a sage, that Chocham ben Chocham to explain it. The source begins. Ovei Kechavim, and we've also labeled this Aleph because Beis will appear on the top of Omid Beis in featuring a Yisrael. So first we feature a Gentile, Ovei Kechavim, Shehevi Avona Min HaMarkalis, a Gentile who brought stones from the Markalis idol, V'chipo Bohen Drochim V'tartios, and he paved with it roads and plazas, Mutoros. It's Mutor, the taking of the stones and using them for paving material constitutes a bittul of the avodah zarah, avoiding of the idol. Yisrael shevi avona min amarkalis v'chipo behen drochim v'sartios, a Jew who did the same thing, asuros, they remain forbidden. V'les nagor v'lo bar nagor diyafrkino, and there is no one to resolve this. There's no sage to resolve this. Omar Rav Sheshis, Ano, Rav Sheshis declares, I am lo nagor ano, I am not a wise man, velo bar nagor ano, nor I am the son of a wise man, ufarikno le, and I will explain the source. My kushyo le, what could possibly be a difficulty in this source? De Rav Gidol, are you thinking that maybe Rav Gidol is a problem? Now Rav Gidol is a shita that represents the idea that takruvas avodas chachamim has no bittul, has no voiding. Rav Gidol is indicated with a little star that we have to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with an indication of Amud Aleph next to it. If you want to find Rav Gidol, you just turn to Amud Aleph, or scroll back to Amud Aleph, find also to the left-hand side of the Gemara text a star with an Amud Beis indication next to it, and lo and behold, you will find Rav Gidol's name is dashed, underlined, to make it easier to spot him. He is the one that introduced the idea that things offered to idols have no bittul. So in this case, you might have thought that the stones thrown at the Markalis that were eventually used for paving, that those stones were offerings to an idol, and they should have no bittul. But that's no problem. This is what Rav Sheshis continues to say. Bo'ino ke'ein penim v'leko. In order for something to have the status of a takruvas avodas kechavim that has no bittul, it would have to be a type of offering to the idol that would have been practiced in the Beis HaMikdash. That's the expression ke'ein penim, means like within the Beis HaMikdash. Stones were never offered as something in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore they don't constitute a takruvas. And therefore, they lend themselves to being voided. And hence, the paved areas are allowed. As we mentioned before, we have a new section of Gemara. We've presented it in the brackets, as we indicated before. The topic here has nothing to do with idolatry, but it's brought in because it's presented the same way as the case we just had. In other words, a source that's posed as difficult, and then the Gemara eventually shows how what you thought is difficult is not difficult. In this next case, we'll end up presenting a source that is posed as difficult, and by the end of the sukkah, in fact, it will be presented or accepted as a difficult issue to understand. And if you want to skip ahead in the Gemara, you can skip all the way down to the end of the bracketed section, the line or two before the brackets are closed. There the Gemara says, Hainu dekomar le, now I understand that which was said, les nagar velo bar nagar de yafrikina. That this is something that we have no sage to resolve. So, until that point, we have to delve into the topic and see what might have been difficult and what might not be difficult. To the in the outside margin, we have a nosei, we have a topic heading. It says under the nosei, Tipul be'ilonois b'shvias u'b'moed, care of trees during the Shemitah year and during Chol HaMoed, two different time periods. The Shemitah year is a time period during which agricultural activity, generally speaking, is prohibited. Chol HaMoed is also a time that, even though it's part of its name is Chol, it's also part of a holiday, and there are numerous Molocha activity restrictions that pertain to Chol HaMoed. As we go on in the Gemara, we will notice numerous markings. As you scan down, you see quite a few different forms. They are explained under the Mivneh heading. First of all, we have a house form. Those are Amoroyim HaMenasim Legalos HaKoshi B'Mokor. Who are the names that are marked off with like this? Ravina. And later on, we have Rav Sama Breder of Ashi. They are Amoroim trying to show what the difficulty in the source may be. We'll then see triangles with their point facing up. Hatsaos Lemahu Hakoshi, suggestions of what might be a difficulty. Then we will see triangles inverted, which is the Chiyosam, saying that that's what you presented as a difficulty is not difficult. As you scan down the side of the Gemara, we will notice a shin, the side meaning to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara, where the first house form appears, Ravina appears. There will be a shin that's circled, and a long dashed vertical line with triangles in numbers as you continue down. What you can see right ahead is, after we learn the source, and we claimed that the source is difficult, we will see 1, 2, 3, and 4 attempts to show what the difficulty in the source may have been. But each time a triangle appears facing up, at each stage the Gemara will say, what you are claiming is a difficult point to understand is in fact easily resolved. That will continue and continue until you get to a point in the Gemara where the second house name comes in, that's Rav Sama, where he says, I have an answer to what is difficult in the source, and we've marked that off with a dashed triangle, a broken triangle, to indicate that this is a slightly different situation than before. This will be the maskana we've written to the side of the Gemara. You can see we've presented there under this Mivneh heading, the dashed triangle, maskana mahu akoshi. It will be a final presentation of what the difficulty really is. So right now, we turn to the Gemara. Omar of Yosef Mar Abba, Iklo Rabo Bar Yirmiyah Le'asrin. Once again, Rav Yosef tells us that Rabo Bar Yirmiyah came to our town. V'osav Aisi Masisi Biyodei, and he brought a Tanaic source. You can see the Tanaic source is in a frame, and after the Tanaic source, the reaction upon hearing this source is v'les nagar v'lo ba nagar nafrikina. What we've done, in addition with our markings, we've also squiggle underlined this whole expression to draw your attention to it being seen before, where you can see on the second line, third line from the top, likewise, the similar expression, squiggle underline. All of these markings are here to show the balance in the sugya, the repetitious style of the structure, even though the content changes. So what is the source that he brought, that Rabo Bar Yirmiyah brought to Rav Yosef's town? The source begins. Before we read it, let's just remind ourselves that we're going to be talking about the care of trees, different activities that were done in the care of trees. We can also, by way of introduction, point out there are different forms of care. Certain forms of care are designed to prevent depreciation, to prevent the development of something negative. There are other activities that are designed to improve, to take a situation from current situation and improve. the first activity, in other words, the first set of activities that we described, were situations where activities are done in order to prevent decay or depreciation. Let us now read the source. Maslin umizamin b'shvias. Maslin is a process, Rashi describes, of removing worms from a tree. Mizamin, let us look at the Rashi, fourth line from the top. Kishyesh maka b'ilan, if there is an injury on a tree, the noshra k'tzas kliposo, and some of the bark has fallen off, matbikin sham zevel, they would paste on to the tree some fertilizer material, the kushrin, and tie it on, shelo yomus, to prevent the tree from dying. Velo domi hai, and this is not to be compared to what's found in Maseches Moed Katan, where it says li'ein mezavlin de Moed Katan. There, the Gemara, the Mishnah mentions that one should not, there's a Tanaic source that mentions one should not fertilize during Chol HaMoed. Dehasam zibul de karka, there it's an issue of fertilizing the ground, v'havya avoda shebesodeh v'shebekerem, which is a standard agricultural activity that's practiced in fields and vineyards. Here we're not talking about that. We're talking about the use of the fertilizer stuck onto the tree proper to prevent it from dying. So our source says that these things of maslin umizamin b'shvias, they're allowed to be done during the Shemitah year. V'ein maslin umizamin b'moyed, but not during Chol HaMoed. Kan v'kan, shvias and Chol HaMoed, ein megazmin. We don't do gizum. What is gizum? This is a situation of pruning a tree in order to promote additional growth. When trees are pruned, there's a tendency for them to produce even more branches than were there initially. V'sochin shemen lagozum. If a tree had been cut before this time, before Moed or Shvias, and now you've arrived to Shvias or Moed, there you're allowed to smear oil onto that spot on the tree that had been cut. And Rashi points out that this is in order to prevent it from dying. So that's what's meant by v'sochin shemen lagozum bein b'moyed bein b'shvias. This procedure is allowed to be done, whether it be Chol HaMoed or Shvias. So we've seen the source, and the reaction to hearing this is v'les nagar v'lo bar nagar the afrikina, and there's no wise man to resolve this. Amar Ravina, ano lo nagar ano v'lo bar nagar ano u mifrikino lo. I am not a wise man, I'm not the son of a wise man, and I will be able to resolve whatever is a problem. Michael Kashile, well, what was the problem? Ilemo moyed ashvias kokashile. That what might have been the difficulty to, let us say, Rav Yosef Bar Abba, who felt that the source was unexplainable, the issue of moyed ashvias, the Gemara explains. My shno shvias the shari. What is different about shvias, the Shemitah year, that the Mishnah said maslin umizamin b'shvias, u maishno moyed aser? The same Tanaic source said that ain maslin umizamin when it comes to Chol HaMoed. So you may ask that you may find that difficult. That why should there be a difference in standard when both are time periods that have in common restrictions with regard to activities, especially agricultural activities? The response to that is, that's not a difficulty. You know, if that were the difficulty, it's no problem. Me dummy. How can you compare Shvias to Moed? Shvias melocha asa rachmona, tircha shari. With regard to the Shemitah year, formal activities are forbidden. However, matters that are an issue of troubling oneself, that's called tircha, troubling oneself, that's allowed. So these practices of removing worms or the pasting of of a fertilizer on a tree injury, those are not formal malachos. Those are not you can't parallel them to plowing and irrigation and planting and other types of major activities. These are pircha forms of movement or of activity, as opposed to formal major acts. Therefore, Shvius, the ban only concerns major agricultural cultivation. That's banned. Troubling oneself is not banned. Moed, however, when it comes to Chol HaMoed, there's a different standard. Afilu Tircha Nami Oser. There's a greater stringency that even Tircha is banned. And Maslin and Mezamin constitutes or falls into the category of Tircha. So that number one would not have been a problem. The Elo Zihum Agizum Kokashile. Maybe the issue of Zihum versus Gizum, both during Shemitah, would be a difficulty. Maishno Zihum Deshari. What is different about Zihum that the source says Mizan Bishis, you're allowed to do that. That was the pasting of the fertilizer on the tree injury. Umaishno Gizum the Osir. And what's different about Gizum that is prohibited? So that too, the Gemara responds and says, that is not a difficulty. Midomi. How can you compare them? Zihum, the process of Zihum, which we say is allowed, ukumi ilona vishari. It's simply to preserve a tree, keep it from decaying, keep it from dying. So preservation activities are allowed. Gizum, however, the pruning of the tree in order to promote further additional growth, avruye ilona v'osir. That is designed to strengthen and improve. It's not mere preservation. It's an improvement activity. And that is not allowed. Once again, we're talking about both activities during the Shemitah. So to review, during the Shemitah, preservation activities are allowed. Improvement activities are not. V'ela, we're up to stage 3 now. Zihum azihum kokashile. There seems to be a contradiction within the realm of Zihum. Dikotani, our source says, Maslin umizahamin b'shvius. With the arrow that you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you can see where this quote is coming from. It's coming from our opening brisa. So on the one hand, it says that mizahamin, which we've squiggle underlined, is allowed during the Shemitah year. The Ramini, we have another source that says as follows. Before we read it, let's point out that this source features activities done during Erev Shvius, pre-Shvius. In other words, during the time that leads up till Rosh Hashanah of a Shemitah year. And we will say, in reading this source, we will then infer from it that the allowance of Mizamin is only up till the Shemitah year. But during the Shemitah year, it won't be allowed. And you can see, by using the markings, even before we read the Gemara, you can see that we've dashed underlined B'Shvius just now, and after, in a few lines from now, you see another dashed underline where it says B'Shvius Loi. Not allowed. So if you focus strictly on the marked words, before the question is posed, before the difficulty is raised, you see a squiggle underlined Mizamin and a dashed underlined Bishvius. So you read that together. Mizamin, Bishvius. It's allowed. Then you read the squiggle underline that follows. It says Mizamin, Bishvius lo. If you skip and read that together with the dashed underline, it would come out that Bishvius, you're not allowed to do Mizamin. And that will be our problem. So let's now read this smoothly in the Gemara. The Gemara in Triangle 3 says, Zihum azihum kokashile, dikotoni, maslin umizamin vishvius. That was the source we saw above. U viromini, and we raise a contradiction. Mizamin es hanetios, v'korchen oison, v'koitmin oison, v'oison lehem botin, u'mashkin oison, ad Rosh Hashanah. For our purposes, there is no urgency in describing all of the details of this source. What is urgent is just to note that mizamin, is allowed to be done ad Rosh Hashanah. That means until the Rosh Hashanah of Erev Shvius, which means until the end of the sixth year of the 7 year cycle. And we infer that ad Rosh Hashanah in, that Mizamin is allowed up till Rosh Hashanah. However, b'Shvius lo. But during the Shemitah itself, it's not allowed. We have a contradiction on our hands. To this too, the Gemara says, why do you think that that's a difficulty? V'dilma k'derav ukva bar chamo. Maybe the resolution is as he claims. The Omar Rav Ukva bar chamo, he says in a different context, he says, trei kishkushi havu. The expression kishkushi in this case has to do with digging a furrow under an olive tree. So there are two situations of kishkushi which is relevant to an olive tree. Chad v'ruya iluna, one is designed for improving the plant, the osir, and that's forbidden. V'chad l'stumefili, v'shori, and the other one is to cover up exposed roots. The Rashi describes a situation where if the roots of the tree, which are supposed to be under the ground surface, became exposed, so stumi pili would be mutter. That, in other words, digging around the roots in order to cover them up, that would be okay. Hachinami, so using that example of the same activity but being divided into under two situations. So to here, tre zihamumi havi. There are two types of zihum. Chad ukumi yuni vishori. One is to prevent depreciation or decay of the tree, and that's allowed. Vichad levriya yuni viosir. And the other one would be a type of zihum process, which would serve to improve the tree, and that we will not allow. And that is the resolution of these two sources. Vielo. What might be a difficulty? This is number four. Sicho asicho kokashile. The issue of the smearing of oil on the tree. The Katani, one source says, Sochin shemen lagozum bein b'moed bein b'shvius. This is a continuation of the source we saw above. So, according to this source, and you notice how we've dashed underlined b'shvius, this source is suggesting that Sochin is allowed on shvius. The Ramini, we have a contradictory source. Once again, we're going to read the source and draw the inference from the source to get to the contradictory point. This source says, Sochen es hapagin, umenakvin umefatmin, oison ad Rosh Hashanah. The main thing for us to pay attention to is the Sochen expression. Here it also talks about Sochen, and you can see we've squiggle underlined those words. Sochin es hapagin. Pagin are figs. One is allowed to sochin, to smear the oil on the figs, and other procedures, menachvin umefatmin oson, which we don't have to delve into right now. It says ad Rosh Hashanah, until Rosh Hashanah of the Erev Shvius, until Rosh Hashanah of Shvius year. That means during this, till the end of the sixth year. Ad Rosh Hashanah in Bashvius lo. And we've dashed underlined the key expression, which is, we might say that until Rosh Hashanah, you can do it. However, during the Shemitah year, no. If you compare the dashed underlines, here it says B'Shvius lo. Two lines up, we've dashed underlined B'Shvius, meaning you're able to do it during Shemitah. That would appear to be a difficulty. The Gemara to this also says, Mi Domi. This isn't a problem. This could not have been reason for the original reaction saying that the source is difficult. Midomi, hocha ukumi ilna vishari. The source that says sochin shemen lagozum, that's in order to preserve the tree. Actions of preservation are allowed during the Shemitah year. Hasam, the second source that involves doing sochin to the figs, hasam fitume. Petume pira v'aser. That's in order to richen the fruit. That's a matter of improving the fruit. That's not just an action of preservation. That's an improvement activity, and that's banned. So up till this point, we essentially have a long question. The long question being, what is difficult about the source? There, we haven't shown any difficulty. Amalei Rav Samo Brei de Rav Ashi the Ravina. Rabbo Bar Yirmiyah, let's just remember that he is the one that brought the source in. So Rabbo Bar Yirmiyah, Sicha Demoyed Azihum Demoyed Kokashile, when he declared that there's no one to explain this source, there's no one that can resolve it, it's because of this problem, the issue of Sicha during Chol HaMoed versus Zihum during Chol HaMoed, Michti. Let's look into this. Hi Ukumi Vehai Ukumi. Both of these activities are for preservation purposes. My Shno Hai Deshori. What's different about Sicha that the source said it can be done? We saw there Sochim Shemin Lagozum Bein Bemoyi. Umay Shno Hai the Osir. And what's different about Zihum that the source said regarding Zihum? It said Ein Maslinu Mizamin Bemoyi. Why is there a difference between two activities that are both designed for preservation? Oh, Hainu du Komale, Les Nagar, Velo Bar Nagar, the Afrikina. With that, we understand why Rabbo Bar Yirmiyah said that there is no wise man to resolve this. You see, in our markings, we have a slash in the Gemara, indicating that that which follows is a new idea. Before we read the Gemara itself, let us take advantage of the Nosei Mivneh heading we've assigned to the topic, to this sukya. In the outside margin, you see a bowtie form. The bowtie represents Shnei Memros Shel Rav B'inyin Avodah Zorah She'ovdin Oisoi B'makel. Halachas or comments of Rav concerning idols served with sticks. The first issue focuses on a chiyuv gavra, the guilt of the worshipper, and a second point, the second issue, will deal with the iser chepsa, the item, the stick itself becoming prohibited. Omar Rav Yehuda Marav, Avodas Kechovim She'ovdin Oisa B'makel. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's just take note of the positioning of these bowtied sections. One is found over here. Number two is found on Nun Aleph, Omid Aleph. A number of lines from the top. The upper part of the page, you can see a number two. As far as this particular shir, we will learn the Gemara up till the number two. So, Rav Yehuda Marav tells us about an idol, She'ovdin Oisa B'makel, that's worshipped with the use of a stick. Rashi points out over here, Avodas Kechovim She'ovdin Oisa B'makel, She'mekashkashin Lefonel B'makel, that there's some type of banging in front of it with a stick, and that is its service. So that, if that's the way this thing is served, the halacha of Rav continues, Shovar Makel Befonei Ohio. If one took a stick and broke it, split it in front of the idol, that is Chayav, that's guilty. The one who does that would be guilty of idol worship. Zorak makel b'fonel poter. One who threw a stick in front of it, that it would be exempt. Omer le'abaye l'rova. My shno shovar. What is different about shovar that we said there is guilt for doing that, for breaking a stick in front of this idol? To have a ka'ein zvicha, because if you have a decent imagination, you will see it's a type of slaughtering. Just like in slaughtering, you're severing something. So too, over here, you're severing the stick. Zarak nami havile ka'ein zrika. Why can't we say that the throwing of the stick is like the sprinkling of the blood, which is an activity you find in the Beis HaMikdash. And we are set, we know that activities done in the Beis HaMikdash, if you do them to an idol, even if it's not its normal way of service, that creates, it nevertheless creates guilt by virtue of the fact that it's something done in the Beis HaMikdash. So just like breaking the stick in front of the idol, even though this idol isn't worshipped with stick breaking, it's worshipped through stick banging, nevertheless, the breaking is like Zavicha, which is something done in the Beis HaMikdash, so too, we should say, by the throwing of the stick. And yet, we see that Zorak Makafuneh is Potter. Omar Le, Rava answers, if you're wondering why Zorak is exempt, I'll explain. He says, Bo'ino Zrika Mishtaberes Veleka. In order to resemble the throwing in the Beis HaMikdash, it has to be like the Zrikas Hadam. The Zrikas Hadam was a function of sprinkling something that was in droplet form, the droplets of blood. The throwing of the stick doesn't have that characteristic, hence it doesn't parallel the Zrika of the Beis HaMikdash. Esvei, the Gemara raises a question from a Tanaic source. We also have a long question marking that runs to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see an encircled kuf with a vertical dashed line, taking us to the third line from the top of Nun Aleph Omed Aleph. The source says, Sofas lo tsoya, one fed the idol some dung, or he poured in front of it a flask containing urine, chayov. These are acts that are considered idolatry. Rashi points out, very importantly, these acts are considered idolatry even if this particular idol is not served through Tsoa and Meiraglayim. Bishlamo Ovid Shomei Meiraglayim, as far as that is concerned, I can understand how that results in guilt, one who pours in front of it urine. Ikos Riko Mishtaberes, you have the issue of something that is in droplet form. Elot Tsoya, but with regard to dung, my Zriko Mishtaberes Ika, where do you have a droplet element so that we can label it as something like in the Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara answers, Bitsoa Lecha, if it's waste that's liquidy. There are situations where what is supposed to be the non-urine waste coming from an organism, sometimes instead of in solid pieces, it's liquidy. And therefore, it has this characteristic of Zrika Mishtaberes, droplet form. Lemo ketanoi. Maybe we can suggest that Rav's din is a machlokes tanoim. This is a question. Whenever you see lemo in the Gemara, it's basically a question. Can we say that something is a machlokes tanoim? Here we have a question, a long question marking to indicate the length of this suggestion. You see a shin to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line indicating the length of the question. So let us see now opinions of Tanoim and see how Rav would be the subject of their machlokes. Shochat lo chagov, one slaughtered a locust to an idol. Wanted to serve his idol, so he slaughtered a locust in service of his idol. Rav Yehuda mechayev v'chachamim potrin. My lav b'ha komifligi. What must be the point of difference between them? The Mar Savar Amrinon Kein Zvicha. Rav Yehuda says that in order to achieve guilt, it's enough to have something that resembles slaughtering. Umar Savar Lo Amrinon Kein Zvicha Elo Kein Pnim. That it's not sufficient to have something that resembles slaughtering, but you have to have something that is like that which is done in the Beis HaMikdash. And according to this approach, we would not say that the breaking of the stick is sufficient. And rather, you need to have an action, an avoda, that they would do in the Beis HaMikdash, like shechita. If that be the case, then the din of Rav that suggested that the breaking of the stick would be chayav, that would work out only according to Rabbi Yehuda, but not according to the Chachomim. Rashi presents this on the second line from the top. Mar Sovar, Rabbi Yehuda Sovar, Amrinon Ke'ein Zvicha V'Afopi Delav Zvicha Mamish. As long as something resembles slaughtering, even if it's not actual slaughtering, V'Afopi Delav Zvicha Mamish Hi, Deha Ein Shchitas Chavgovim Noheges. When you're dealing with locusts, there's no shchita that's necessary for them. V'Have, the slaughtering of the locust, since it doesn't need slaughtering, is Havi Kishviras Makel. It's like the breaking of the stick, which is the topic Rav was dealing with. And Rabbi Yehuda said, Chayov, Hoyol, V'ikol, L'meimar, Ke'ein, Zvicha. Since there is room to say, using your imagination, it's like slaughtering. V'adin, Shviras Makel. And similarly, with regard to the breaking of the stick, Davio, Shvira, V'chituch, insofar as that there is a breaking and a cutting of something. Midelo, Amrinon, from the fact that this source where Rav Yehuda doesn't teach us about a goose or a chicken, but rather those are things that have actual shita by them, but he chose to feature a chagov, a locust, which is something that doesn't have any shita to it. So with that in mind, we can parallel the case of the chagov to the stick. And Rav Yehuda said chayov, that it's enough that it resembles shchita, in the sense that it has a breaking associated with it, a severing. Rashi goes on, Rabbonon Savri, the Rabbonon who said Potter, they hold Lo Amrinon B'Shvira Ke'ein Zvicha. We don't say regarding the breaking of the stick that that is sufficiently similar to slaughtering, because the Rabbonon hold you have to have Ke'ein Pnim. Loi. No. Don't say that Rav's halacha is the subject of a machlokas tanoim. The Kuli Almo, even Rabbi Huda would say, Loi Amrinon Ke'ein Zvicha. Even Rabbi Huda would essentially not agree with Rav, and certainly the Rabbonon, that with regard to the Makel, we will not say it's Ke'ein Zvicha, that it is like slaughtering. So if you say that, what's so let's read that again. We say lo, de kule alma lo amrinon Ke'ein Zvicha, elo Ke'ein Pnim Bo'inon. The two Tanoim here, Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim, will say that you have to have something more similar to that which takes place in the Beis HaMikdash itself. And the breaking of the stick is not sufficiently similar to something taking place in the Beis HaMikdash. The question then is, well then, why is Rabbi Yehuda mechayev in the case of slaughtering the chagov? The shiny chagov, the case of the locust is different. Hoyel v'tzavoro doime l'tzavor behema, because the locust has a neck, and the neck is reminiscent of the neck of a behema, of an animal. So the slaughtering of the locust, so to speak, according to Rabbi Yehuda, sufficiently ke'ein pnim to warrant guilt, but not the breaking of the stick. So, as far as the maskona of this gemara is concerned, Rav may have said his halacha that shviras makel is chayav, but he cannot rely upon these tanoim to base his halacha. Not even Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda has a stringency that it goes only up to the point of a chagov, not as far as breaking a stick. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.